This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasuthi. In the studio with me, of course, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist. We are tackling this topic of dengue fever today.
And not quite too urological, but I was so excited about your week review about what sort of cases that we do. From one bite, we're going to a different bite, right?
Really?
So, yeah, this is, I just thought that. We'll just put that in to entertain the whole Klang Valley. So Right. Then you think that, no pun intended.
No pun intended, but you know what, George? The numbers are frightening.
It is frightening. I mean, truthfully, it's like when I heard the news, I thought I heard the wrong thing. Therefore, when we thought about discussing this, so it's clearly not urological, although sometimes we missed diagnosis as infections of the kidney because patient bleed from the urinary tract and, you know, have high temperature. Sounded very similar to something called pyelonephritis. However, it affects every one of us, not just men, not just women. You know, the whole Klang Valley, the whole Southeast Asia is affecting all of us. And you just need to ask anybody who recently has just been to a hospital, not just a private hospital, and, you know, if you have got anything that is routine, need to go to hospital for, you know, admission, you'll realize that the hospital queue is much longer in terms of admissions because we're really having a huge problems of admitting patients and also long recovery in the hospital for patients who suffer from dengue.
I'm very curious. You said sometimes people come to you with blood in the urine.
That's right.
And it could be dengue, right? But then the general thing to do is when you have fever and body aches and stuff is to go to see the GP. The last person you're going to see is a specialist.
Because, that's right.
But which presents, you would have symptoms of fever and everything, and then does the blood in the urine come later?
Or? Well, the bleeding, you know, it's not just in the urine. The bleeding, you know, the skin that actually will have kind of like a, you know, evidence of under the skin bleeding. All these will come later when the platelet count is low. So hopefully, you know, Dr. Christopher later on is going to actually highlight it and all the kind of like a real early stage symptoms, middle stage symptoms and severe symptoms so that we can actually get a real expert opinion in order to find out how to recognize this. But, you know, we do get patients who turn up in the hospital with high fever, and then the first things that we do now is just ensure that, you know, these patients are not suffering from dengue fever.
Right. I mean, there's no cure, George. Neither is there a vaccine, and hence therein lies the challenge, really, isn't it? So it's
absolutely
all about management, right?
And in fact, the management itself is conservative management. I mean, this is Malaysian data. I mean, it's like this is the STAR data that was published. You know, for those who thought the rise in the number of dengue cases was bad, but actually is really, really bad because there has been 248% spike in the number of cases this year, 228% increase in number of death. What that equates to is this time last year is 12,143 cases, and then, you know, this year it rose to 42,229 reported cases, you know, because many cases probably go unreported as well. And but that would give us a ballpark figure that you're looking at a threefold increase. And then also June 21st, 82 people had died of dengue nationwide. And then that is a 228% increase compared to 25 recorded death last year. So it is indeed quite a scary thing. And then, you know, we want to hear from people who suffer from this, how you feel. And then hopefully we'll get Dr. Christopher online shortly. And then, you know, we'll tell us a little bit more why we're facing this problem.
Yes, I mean, we're just having a bit of problems getting him on the line. But, you know what, our phone lines are open, 0377109000. We'd love to hear, I would like to hear your experience if you have indeed had dengue. How did you sort of recover, and what was the recovery? What was the recovery process? You know, one of the other things, George, is there's a lot of talk about, because there's no cure, right? There's a lot of talk about complementary or alternative methods.
All right, we would like to hear from you about that too.
To help with, you know, dengue. I mean, one of which very, very prominent or famous that everyone's talking about is to boil papaya leaves and drink it. And you know, if you wonder whether there's evidence, there's actually been some research done in the hospital in Klang, Institute of Medical Research at Hospital Tengku Ampuan Rahima. Mm-hmm. And they reported that patients given papaya leaf juice showed a significant rise in their platelet levels 40 hours after first receiving the juice compared to patients in the control group who were only on standard supportive therapy.
Oh, wow.
So this has been done in Johor, right in our backyard. So
no, you know the thing
is rubbish this stuff.
No. The thing is that what makes me wonder is who came up with pinpointing papaya leaves and they say, okay, this is the leaf that's going to solve the problem. This is the way to boil it and this is the way to drink it. I mean, who on earth came up with that, right? You know, so it must be some sort of observation that the mosquito, the Aedes are not really flying towards a papaya tree and
no,
somehow...
it's ancient science. It's increasing your platelet count, you know. I mean, the papaya... Okay, what increases platelet count?
Well, I don't know. It's like,
I mean, it's just, you know, modern medicine.
Well, modern medicine, if you actually just kind of like a reduce the destruction of the platelets, then you actually prevent it more. Because one of the problems about dengue fever is that you actually have more and more platelets that's been destroyed. And then so reduction of destruction and enhancing the production. Enhancing production actually is in the bone marrow, mm-hmm. because platelets actually can be, you know, produced in bone marrow. The organs that destroy platelets will be something like a spleen, an enlarged spleen, we call splenomegaly, actually will play a role in order to destroy more and more platelets. And then infection, sepsis, you know, and also dengue sepsis are all the typical things that are conditions that can actually result in destruction. Mm-hmm. So in order to, enhance the number, so the papaya leaves can probably play two roles, either stimulating production or reducing destruction.
Of course, you never know, right?
Or both.
Yeah, or both. Because the management of the whole management of dengue is, mm-hmm. one is the hydrate.
It's maintaining hydration.
Mm-hmm. And then, in worst case scenario, blood transfusion if there is a need, right?
Yeah, well, you know, for somebody who is obviously bleeding more, and then, you know, transfusion actually is, you know, something that is important. And then, you know, but maintaining fluid balance is crucial, because during the septic stage, and then the vessels becomes quite leaky. And when that happens in all sepsis, it can happen in someone that's got pneumonia, for example, and pneumonia gets into the bloodstream, can cause something like that. Mm-hmm. In urological scenario, we always get patients with urosepsis, which is something that actually quite is frightening, and it can be life-threatening. And under those circumstances, of course, the role of antibiotics is absolutely crucial. But fluid hydration, you know, you will see that, you know, on ER or any of these emergency medicine pictures, and then the first thing they put in the big cannula to flush as much fluid into your body as possible to expand the fluid, because that is what is going to keep you alive. But we're dealing with virus here, so antibiotics will not work, and the only way to deal with this is in order to expand the fluid and enhance fluid hydration.
We have on the line with us Dr. Christopher Lee, Head and Senior Consultant Physician of Infectious Disease Department of Medicine of Hospital Sungai Buloh. He's a very busy man. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Christopher.
Great to hear from you, Dr. Christopher. I was getting quite frightened that if you are not coming to join me, I am going to struggle as a urologist talking about dengue here.
Oh, I was loving that. I hope you would talk more about it. Maybe there's some new modality I'm not aware of.
That's right. Okay, you know.
Yeah, we were talking about papaya leaves and how it helps, but we'll come to that in a short while, Dr. Christopher. I think what we're all very concerned about is numbers have risen same period last year by almost 4 times. It's 3.7 times. Is there a reason for that?
Well, I think there are certainly multiple factors that have led to it. One, I think, could be, of course, the weather has not helped, in the sense the weather of dry spells, intermittent rains, that has not helped. I think, obviously, we heard from the Prime Minister himself, the overall cleanliness, hygiene in terms of breeding sites for mosquitoes have not come down significantly, and that has added to the problem. But I think there's also a virological reason for that is the type of serotype that is now floating around in Malaysia. At the moment, we are getting, as you know, there are 4 different serotypes for dengue. Mm-hmm. And the dengue serotype 2, or dengue 2, is the one that's currently the leading serotype. And we all know that the dengue serology type 2 may be actually higher mortality or higher severity when it comes to manifestation of illness.
So there's a virulence differences between, DEN 1 to DEN 4?
Correct.
All right, okay. And then for whatever reason, DEN 2 seems to be the kind of like more prevalent cases that are spreading in KL at the moment.
Right.
Is it true that if unfortunately, 2 years ago, you were infected with DEN 1, you don't necessarily have the protection for DEN 2 this time?
Correct. Now, as you know, that there is some immunity for dengue for the same serotype. So if I was infected with DEN 4, I would not be infected with DEN 4 again. But if DEN 3 comes along, or DEN 2 or DEN 1 comes along, and I get infected with that sub-serotype, my manifestations in the second time may actually be worse or more serious than the first episode.
That's scary.
And that is why, of course, if the Aedes mosquitoes is really rampant and dengue is very, very common, then you're more likely to be infected with another serotype. So whenever there's a change in serotypes for whatever reason, the risk to the person who's infected is increased.
Okay. The government has set up a task force, Dr. Rusiva, because that's how serious, it has, levels have reached. What is this task force for? And, I'm just thinking that I think we do the usual things any government would do, even normally when it comes to dengue fever. So how different is this task force going to be?
Well, I think the main reason for that is it cuts across all sectors of community. The Ministry of Health can only do so much, and of course the focus will be on treatment and some prevention. Prevention is basically education and also general hygiene. But when it comes to disposal of garbage and cleanliness of the environment, it's not purely under Ministry of Health. It's often under the local authorities, for example. So getting the local authorities on board in a very focused way would be a good thing to do. So with the Deputy Prime Minister chairing this task force, I think it cross-cuts along all ministries, and I think it probably will work very well together. This task force has happened for other health situations, like during Nipah virus, there was a inter-ministerial task force, in those days for HIV and AIDS, there was an inter-ministerial task force, and this allows the government to coordinate various ministries to work together. So I think this would certainly, I do sincerely hope they will have a benefit to what we see in our country.
Dr. Christopher, are the numbers centered around the Klang Valley, or is it spread out throughout the country?
Well, certainly, I think the entire country has seen an increase, but there's no question Selangor and Wilayah, the Klang Valley, is the real hotspot.
That says a lot about us. What are we doing?
Well, is it because it's more commonly acquired in the urban environment?
Right. Absolutely.
Why?
Well,
Is it true that it's because the mosquito has certain affinity to kind of artificial stagnations of water, and affinity to a very crowded, kind of like a populated urbanization?
This is a bit of a fussy mosquito, but yes, changing as I hear, they like actually clean water, inverted commas, clean water rather than murky, dirty, muddy water. So, and that is collects in actually in false, in artificial containers, not natural containers so much, but artificial containers like what we put out, our garbage and things like that, our styrofoam boxes and things like that, tires, those are best examples where it collects water. Even a small teaspoon of water, actually, they can breathe there. Mm-hmm. So they prefer actually cleaner water rather than the swampy, dirty water, if you like. But the other reason, of course, is we think also is the development and the closeness of the population in these urban areas. Certainly dengue is an urban disease by far.
Okay. The hygiene hypothesis comes to mind, isn't it? Thanks to us, being paranoid about being super clean, that we have so much clean water all over the place. Just hold the line, Dr. Christopher. We'll be back. Our phone lines are open if you'd like to give us a call. It's 0377 109 000. We're discussing dengue fever. And before we let Dr. Christopher go after the break, we'll also be touching on Japanese encephalitis. We've seen 2 cases in Penang. What does this mean for the rest of the country? We'll discuss all of that up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It's The Bigger Picture and I'm Mira Sivasuthi. We're discussing dengue fever today. Numbers have gone up by 3.7 times in the first 6 months of this year compared to last year. The numbers are at 42,000 at the moment, about there, compared to, what, 12,000 about?
That's right.
In the same period last year. On the line with us is Dr. Christopher Lee. He's a head and senior consultant physician of the Department of Medicine Hospital, Sungai Buloh. And of course, not to forget Dr. George Lee in the studio with me.
Who's really playing a role of just co-hosting.
He's co-hosting, Dr. Christopher. I mean, you've kicked him out of his doctor seat for today.
That's right. Okay. Well, well, you could physically come in to kick me out of that. Christopher, did this figure scare you? Do you think that is, underestimate, overestimate, or just right? I mean, did it frighten you?
Well, the numbers are certainly, I think, frightening. We have had a very bad year in 2010 after the H1N1, thank God it didn't come together. Mm-hmm. We had a bad year then, but this year it looks as if it could be worse in terms of numbers. The last few months has been bad. For example, in my hospital, in Sungai Buloh Hospital, we had to open new wards just to keep up with the number of new patients that come in.
My goodness.
So we are pretty stretched everywhere. We are still managing, but of course, if this keeps up, we're going to have problems, sure.
Yeah. Do we have a long-term solution?
Well, of course, the best thing in any viral infection is a vaccine. There's no question about that. Mm-hmm. But vaccine trials are still on the way. I think in the next year or so, we may hear more about the vaccine trials. They're still preliminary, but there's some hope to that. But at the moment, we haven't got them in.
But this is such an old disease, right? I mean, remember the days when I was in my childhood that we had to do the Gotong Royong and that sort of things, right? I mean, these are the old, it's such an old disease. I find it impossible to believe that, every year we heard that there may be vaccines, there may be trial, there may be success. It's such a huge potential for pharmaceutical company. I'm sure there's huge drive. What do you think seems to be the obstacle that actually, for finding these vaccinations against the four dens?
Well, I think the drive to make dengue vaccines, the push has not been really there until the last couple of years. I think why the pharmaceutical companies have not, I think as we all well know, there are other areas in the industry which may actually carry more money in terms of returns for drug companies. Mm-hmm. Antimicrobials are not always the best thing to invest in. I'm told, I'm not in business, but I'm told that lifestyle drugs like cardiovascular drugs actually make the most money, isn't it? Statins. That could be one reason, if purely from the business sense. But the other thing also, whether there's enough will from the medical fraternity, including WHO, whether they have put enough effort. That I'm not privy to. I'm not sure how much effort was put in. But certainly, I think the last few years, WHO has also highlighted the problems with dengue, including the Director General herself talking about dengue. So I think certainly the focus has been reactivated, if you like. But with the dengue trials that are coming through now, I mean, there does appear to be some hope that we will see something out of it at this time.
Okay. Are we alone in this? I mean,
can you just hold on a sec? We have LTY on the line. Christopher, can you hear LTY?
Hello.
Can you hear? Okay, great.
Hello. good afternoon, Mira. Good afternoon, Dr. George. And good afternoon, Dr. Christopher.
Good afternoon.
How are you, the three of you?
Very well.
Now, I wish to express my opinion. Mm-hmm. I feel the relevant authority is not doing enough for prevention measure, okay? I think they should put more effort. You should study the cycle of the Aedes mosquito, then attack as when the time right, okay? My question is this. Do we have any biological control just like for malaria? I think malaria, mosquito, anopheles, we are trying to biologically control it. What about dengue mosquito? Thank you very much.
Thank you, LTY. All right. Dr. Christopher, there was talk about releasing a mosquito that could possibly, kill the rest. I mean, that could turn its back on us and, we could get wiped out because of dengue. But have we made much headway in that area?
I must be frank. We are aware of that. I think the Ministry of Health was talking about it. And there was some, I think it was released, if I'm not mistaken, last year. Was it last year or the year before last? Mm-hmm. But I must say, we have not heard at least I have not heard anything official via the Ministry of Health in terms of what was the outcome of that pilot study. So I don't know whether the Ministry of Health or the Institute of Medical Research is going forward with it. I'm not sure.
How does that work?
There were of course some concerns. I remember in the popular press about we playing God, not playing well with mutants and things like that. You know, and how it would change the ecology. I can understand the concern, but I know that this pilot was done. I think it was in somewhere in Gombak that it was released, but I don't know what's the outcome, to be honest.
Okay, just to go back to the numbers, right? It's not just us in Malaysia who are facing high numbers. The WHO has said that there's very high numbers even in places in Southeast Asia in general. Singapore is struggling with the same problem. Are we working on a regional level to sort of try and figure out a solution for this?
I think there's been some sharing of information across borders, you know, but in terms of doing a concerted effort in working together, I think most things are done on the ground. Most interventions are still very local, because every place the interventions will be a bit different. How Singapore would deal with it would be different because it's a much smaller country. Their control measures would be, the principles would be the same, but I think in terms of whether you can collaborate together, it's probably not very much. For example, we in the Klang Valley, we are pretty alone as far as dealing with the Klang Valley situation is concerned. So not on the day-to-day basis, no.
I like how LTY said, you know, the authorities are not doing enough. I'm sure that upset you.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, our authorities are not doing enough. Because I'm sure it upset.
Whenever there is something that's not going right, I think it's fair thing to say maybe some people can work better. I mean, I would agree with that principle.
No, I agree. Yeah, to a certain extent, you know, authorities play a role. But don't you think when it comes to something like dengue fever, we the people play a much larger role than the authorities?
I was waiting for you to say that, but I'm glad you did. Okay.
No, I understand.
You took your cue very well. Excellent.
Yeah, because the authority, as far as Ministry of Health is concerned, is actually, you know, dealing with the complicated, you know, cases, because when the patients come in to actually give the supportive treatment until the patient recover and hopefully no mortality is recorded. It will presumably, that's what your view is, Christopher?
Yes, obviously. I mean, by the time when we come in for treatment, I think it's after the fact in a sense, because the damage has been done, the infection has already taken place. Some patients will do very well, and the few odd ones may not do so well, and we will struggle with that. With the large numbers of people coming in, something's got to give. You know what I mean? If you are looking after 20 patients, certainly now you're looking after 40 patients, we can redeploy some staff, but you know the quality may be affected. So none of us can actually cope up with the surge capacity to the fullest. But what I think is important for that you mentioned just now was the role of the community, our role in prevention of dengue. The Ministry of Health and the local authorities may come to do fogging and they come to check in certain areas, but we can only do that in the common areas, the public areas. What happens in the home and the houses, really, none of us can just walk into anybody's home and start messing around with your furniture, with your plants, with your koi pond or whatever. So each individual must still look after their own environment. And I know it's a cliche, everybody is talking about it, but I'm the only person who have access to my house to keep things in order in my house, and I worry whether that is that sentiment is shared by our listeners or the public.
Yeah, well, personally, I think in a situation like this, we really should take full responsibility as individuals more than anything else.
I agree.
Kumar is asking.
I mean, for example, you walk in your community, in your area of your residential area. I mean, people cannot check every single day, obviously, but when we go jogging and we walk around the areas, we can see some things, and sometimes we see it, but we don't do anything about it because it's not in our compound, it's on the roadside, and we keep quiet. And unfortunately, that doesn't help as far as the mosquito breeding sites are concerned.
Right. Then authorities come into play. I mean, when we complain, you better come and remove the rubbish because it's not in our territory.
Well, even in a fine city like Singapore, when the authority comes down on you, you know, they still can't really deal with this, right?
You know, I'm just thinking, right, Singapore being such a small country, and if they're grappling with trying to control, and you know, dengue fever, I don't know what to say.
What chance do we have?
Yeah.
Because you would imagine that, you know...
we hope to do better.
That's right.
Well, we hope, yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, you would imagine that, you know, with kind of authority imposing fines and then, you know, regular checkup. And it's a small place to actually inspect that. They will probably not face as much, you know, problem. Unless all the mosquitoes come from Johor or something. Then, you know, it will be, you know, because obviously the mosquitoes will not need a passport to go down.
And, you know, they're clean. Generally,
maybe they should, but they don't.
That's right.
Yeah, something's not right. Singapore would make a great case study.
Yeah.
Kumar is asking, how effective are the commercially available aerosol sprays and mosquito repellents in preventing mosquito bites?
It does help. I mean, as long as they fulfill, of course, there are many brands out there, and you must look at the content. If they are approved, and then there's some. You have to check at the content, really, whether the levels are provided is adequate or not. I don't know. The popular brands probably would work very well. I think if you're uncertain, something you can do is you can actually call up your district health office. They do have some lists of things that are frequently used. They will probably be familiar in recommending that. But I think most of them, better than not having any insect repellent.
What is the risk of death from dengue fever, Dr. Christopher, and who is most at risk?
Well, we know that the elderly, those with comorbidities, those with, let's say, renal impairment, those who are diabetics, those who are morbidly obese with a BMI of more than 40, for example, they have high risk. Most of the cases who have not done well have come from these groups.
I hear that female gender actually is another risk factor that patients won't do too well.
Yeah, the women, in my personal opinion, in the management of dengue, I think it's always a bit more complicated looking after women. I didn't mean that to be a sexist remark.
No,
don't get
but
me wrong.
Why? You probably have a good reason. Okay. I trust you, Dr. Christopher.
You're glad you're not here in front of Mira saying things like that.
I don't mean that in that way, but yes, exactly what George said. You seem to have more complications. I don't know why. But they seem to. And so it's been more...
It's an interesting observation, isn't it? Maybe it's some degree of kind of immunity problems or something like that.
I don't know what the main reason really is. But in terms of if you're a pregnant woman, it's even more difficult because it's much more difficult to assess hydration status, volume status in a pregnant woman.
Yeah. I mean, Mira asked a fantastic question and saying, you know, what exactly is a mortality? I mean, put in a big picture. I mean, we're looking at something like 500 million people worldwide and then leading to 500,000 hospitalization. So we're really looking at an infection that majority of people actually will recover fully without any problems. Isn't that right?
Correct.
Because mortality is about 1% to 5%, and then and less than 1% of them actually, you know, if 1% to 5% without treatment, and then less than 1% if it's with adequate treatment. Would that be kind of adequate accurate figures to reflect on?
That's a reasonable figure to talk about, yes. That's what we expect as well.
Mm.
But, of course, in certain seasons and certain years, our mortality rate seems to be higher. The patients seem to come in more ill. Many of them come in with shock. I must say, during this current season, we frequently see patients coming in shock. They come into casualty, they are already very sick. And most patients now come in on time. Most of them come in up after day 3, day 4 of illness. So they are not really coming in late. I think the awareness that dengue is a dangerous disease to have is sinking in.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, when they come in, they can be very, very sick. So you will see my doctors running up and down, chasing after patients in shock and things like that. So it's pretty traumatic.
When you say shock, what do you mean?
When the blood pressure is low, it's compromised. Your blood pressure is low, your heart rate is up, you know, and your body is trying to compensate, trying to keep that blood pressure up. We call that compensated shock.
Yeah, I begin the show by saying to Mira that sometimes we misdiagnose patients who come in with severe shock, like urosepsis, something like pyelonephritis, that actually result in blood in the urine and then abdominal pain and severe temperature. And then increasingly, obviously, anybody who walks in with high blood pressure, you know, with the pressure from Ministry of Health, and we check everyone for dengue. You know, do you think misdiagnosis sometimes can, you know, can be this sort of like a you know, obstacle to patients being treated enough?
Yes, certainly we see that on a regular basis. But especially patients with comorbidities, they may come in and they may mix something else, and sometimes a diagnosis that's not so accurate is made. We have patients come in with their abdomen being tender and painful, we have patients coming in with jaundice, so you think it's some form of hepatitis or some type of stones, and they're treated as such. So yes, patients of dengue, especially in the in patients with other comorbidities, can actually mimic other diseases. So yes, these things can happen, no question.
So generally, when do we go in? 3 days? After three days?
In fact, you go in any time, really. If you've got high temperature, you're worried. You probably should get it tested, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, we know that most times the critical phase occurs when the fever starts coming down. And that usually occurs between 5 to 6 days. George is right. Anytime you feel ill, you feel unwell, and simple measures don't seem to be working, especially after day one, day two. Very few people feel so unwell they'll come on day one. Usually not. But let's say day two, day three, and you're feeling pretty miserable and you think you're getting worse, especially if you're vomiting a lot, your tummy is painful, then please, by all means, come in. The doctor will assess you, and then they can decide whether it is a false alarm, you can go home, or whether you need to be admitted. But in terms of the danger of death from dengue, really, day 5, day 6 is the most critical period, especially when the fever starts coming down. All of us have simple fevers before. When our fever goes away, we feel a lot better, isn't it? Mm-hmm. We pop in 2 Panadols, the fever comes down for a few hours, we feel good enough to walk around the house. But in patients with dengue, when the fever goes away, if the leakage has been significant, we call it the critical phase, when the fever goes away, the patient actually feels worse.
Right.
The patients, even though the fever is gone, the patient feels very tired, very lethargic, sometimes very sleepy. All these are very bad signs. So I think a quick clue is, if the fever comes down and you're feeling better, maybe you're okay. But if the fever comes down and you're actually feeling more miserable, you feel unwell, then something is serious.
Yeah, sometimes people get loss of consciousness during that leaky phase, right?
Absolutely. We have seen that before. Yes, they become so drowsy, so sleepy, and people say, oh, he's tired, he's sleeping. He's not. he might be going into a coma sometimes.
I mean, one very quick question is that how quick can patients actually get the diagnosis when they go to, like, routine clinic kesehatan or something like that? And how accurate are these, tests to make the diagnosis?
Well, I know that many of the clinic kesehatan are now also using rapid test kits, which are reasonably accurate depending when in the illness you present to the clinic, you know. So if you come in early, you have the NS1 test. If you come in a little bit later, we can do the dengue serology. Nonetheless, whatever test we do, it is still a clinical diagnosis. The important thing is a full blood count and a quick assessment to see whether, if you suspect you have dengue, whether you are you are ill enough to be admitted. Obviously, we can't admit everyone, because if we do that, then the hospital will be
exploded.
Yeah, you're literally exposed, yeah? And the focus will not be there. But it is still a clinical diagnosis. Despite all the tests that we can do, it still must be made on the clinical. Doesn't mean you got your dengue serology is positive, you need to be admitted. You must still see the whether you're ill enough to be admitted.
Well, Dr. Christopher Lee on the line with us. We're discussing dengue fever. We're going to keep you on just for a short while, Dr. Christopher. I know you're a very, very important person at the hospital, especially at a time like this.
Anyway.
Especially another ward being open. We got all the patients listening to the show and say, he should be treating me now.
I don't like this person called George. Okay?
And you know what? This is a pressing issue. And
absolutely,
we'll come back and find out about, there's no cure for dengue. It's all about management. But of course, there's also talk about boiling papaya leaves and drinking it to increase your platelet count. I want to know what Dr. Christopher thinks about that. And also to come back and find out about Japanese encephalitis. We've got 2 cases in Penang. What's going on there? We'll come back after the market update on BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Mira Sivasudhi, together with Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist. He's playing co-host today because we have the guru of infectious diseases, head and senior consultant physician from the Department of Medicine, Hospital Sungai Buloh, on the line with us, Dr. Christopher Lee. We're discussing dengue fever, which, you know, we've seen huge numbers over the last 6 months. The World Health Organization calls dengue one of the fastest growing viral threats globally. So we really need to work together to sort of minimize our risk or our exposure to dengue fever. Dr. Christopher, papaya leaves, boiling them, does that really work?
I'm going to remain quiet on this.
I thought we lost you there.
I was trying to get lost.
The argument is you have nothing to lose because there is no cure.
Right.
So there is really nothing to lose.
Well, I know there were some talk about doing some studies on that. I'm not sure. I'm not doing any studies on that. I'm not sure how far these studies have gone.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly in the medical literature, nothing concrete has come out of such studies so far, as far as I know. So you're right. So there's no clinical data that says it works. Is there any harm taking it? Well, I don't know what papaya leaf contains, but probably it's probably okay. It probably doesn't taste very nice.
Miro is highlighting the increase in platelets count within a short period of time. And then she was asking me whether it is promotion or production or is it actually reduction of destruction. I was getting that in such a short period of time, quite difficult. Might be the lab with errors.
Well, I'm still waiting to hear from Professor Mira afterwards.
No, go to Johor Bahru.
Where did you get that study
some
from?
Some study done by IMR in Hospital Tengku Ampuan Rahimah.
Right, okay. I mean, how whether this is going to have a significant change in the outcome, I don't think people know yet. My take on it would be this. If you feel that you want to try it out, well, go ahead if you feel comfortable to take it. But nonetheless, don't depend on it and say, because I'm taking papaya leaf, therefore I won't see my doctor, my fever will go away, I'll probably get better. I think, by all means, let's stick to the modality of treatment that we know of, that WHO talks about.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to add on something on your own, well, we cannot stop you. Obviously, no one can stop you. But get as much data as possible. That's important. The reason why I'm hesitating, and all doctors would do the same, if you talk about evidence-based medicine, then we must actually have a good randomized controlled clinical trial to tell us whether it's working or not. You know, so I don't have good information on that.
Okay, fair enough. And recovery after
After all, we have about 43,000 people who actually recover from this. And what sort of experience would they have after recovery, and what sort of recommendation would you ask them to focus on?
One, they feel relieved they're out of hospital. And they avoid doctors taking their blood for a long, long time.
Twice a day or something.
More than that, trust me. But I guess the important thing is let's not get reinfected. As we mentioned earlier, when George and I are talking about secondary infections, if you got infected for the second time, well, let's not get the third one for crying out loud, because that's obviously maybe more nasty. So prevention, I think that's important. Making sure where you think you picked it up, from your home, from your workplace, let's keep it clean, let's keep it mosquito-free if we can. And that's important, because dengue is not going to go away. It's going to be there. This year, we're not sure where it's going to end. It tends to be a bit seasonal. It tends to peak in the middle of the year like this and ends before the rainy season starts. But we don't know this year. Everything is all messed up in terms of El Nino and things like that. We don't know. But will it be dengue next year? Yeah, the dengue thing will come again. The dengue season will come again. We live in the tropics. It's not going to go away. But we, as you rightly said, we can control it. If we cut the mosquito population down, dengue doesn't become as big a risk. And that's what we can do.
In terms of recovery, because normally, generally, people say they become really weak after.
Right. Well, it's part of a post-viral syndrome that we see frequently. They go through this period where they feel a little tired, very lethargic, their energy levels are down. Some people, especially the type A personality people, tend to take a longer time to, inverted commas, recover. They are fine. They have no more fever, but they feel tired, they go back to work, they say they can't concentrate. It's something like a post-viral syndrome that we see with other viral infections. But not everybody gets back. Many, I find that the younger people tend to recover very well. They bounce back and they are back to school, back to work, you know. But those who are a bit older tend to take a bit longer time to fully recover.
Okay, so generally the message that's coming through from you is prevention is just mosquito control for dengue fever.
That's what we can do now. The rest, like vaccines, we will have to wait until that product is actually true for public consumption.
Okay.
But at the moment, that's what we need to focus on.
I'm going to quickly move away from dengue fever and quickly touch on Japanese encephalitis. You've seen two cases in the Penang area. Is it something we should be alarmed about? Because I come from Seremban, and the Nipah virus of 1999 is still very, very fresh in my mind. It was a very scary period for people in Bukit Palando. And now that it's not Nipah, it is Japanese encephalitis, but should we be concerned?
Well, again, it is a vector-borne infection. It's a different virus completely.
Mm-hmm.
and it's a different mosquito. It's a Culex mosquito, and it tends to be more rural, so it's not so urban. It's linked to actually wild birds and pigs,
right?
Yeah, they are the reservoirs of this virus, and transmission to mosquitoes is transmission to humans are through mosquitoes. So obviously, I think if we are not close to pig farming, I think the risk becomes less. Urbanization actually tends to drive this away. It tends to be more rural rather than urban. There are vaccines out there. I'm told it's a little bit costly, but vaccines are available. Of course, if you're vaccinated, you're protected. Because Japanese encephalitis infection is a lifelong immunity. So you get vaccinated, you have something you can do. But the risk in Malaysia, it has not been high. It has been very infrequent. It's been sporadic. In Penang, there were two cases fairly close together, so there's some concern there. But I think the public health chaps are right inside trying to monitor their situation. The other animals that are coming actually are cattle and things like that. But things like cattle and they actually, when they get infected, they get sick and they die. But pigs tend to be asymptomatic, so the pigs look fine.
Mm-hmm.
So the vets will have to help monitor JE in the pigs. So I'm sure the vets have been involved in looking at the Penang situation. I'm sure of that. But
okay.
I don't know what's the situation like on the ground there. Yeah.
My guess is you're more concerned about dengue at the moment?
Oh, by far. I think JE is something that comes on and off. I do not think you'll be so difficult to control. It has not had a major outbreak in so-called developed countries for some time. It's really in the more rural areas, really. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sick. You know, I guess, you know, in Penang, you know, do you think that the people ought to think about vaccinations and things like that?
Those who may be closer proximity to pig farming and things like that, they might want to consider it. Yeah, it's the vaccines are available, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it just have to find the right.
Yeah, early on in the news, I heard that, you know, Sarawak, many infants and kids are vaccinated. Mm-hmm. Do you know what was the reason behind that, 2-3 years ago?
Well, last time, remember, there was the
antivirus
and Coxsackie antivirus, yes, thing, you know, and at the same time, there was some talk that there could be JE as well. So mm-hmm. there were many parents were worried and they wanted to vaccinate their kids with something, whatever that could be there to protect the kids from. I think JE was one of those things that people talked about. And so I think there are more Sarawakian kids given Jet B vaccination than, let's say, people in the peninsula.
Yeah. This is 13 years ago, George. It's a long time.
And many countries like China, Taiwan, Thailand, many, you know, the vaccination is quite prevalent, right?
Right. Yeah. I don't know whether it's still ongoing now,
yeah,
but certainly in the more farming communities, it's been going on for some time, yeah.
Dr. Christopher, your message on dengue fever?
Don't get bitten by mosquitoes. Okay, sorry.
That is true.
Okay, that's true. But first, I think first and foremost, protect your own family and protect yourself. Look at your own home environment, because you are the king of that's your castle. I think you really look at it and see whether there's unnecessary water being collected. Many of us like water plants, isn't it, in our gardens and things like that. Making sure that at least once a week the water is changed, or you overfill it so that the top water gets driven away. It's especially dangerous when there's rainy and intermittent dry weathers coming back to back, because water gets retained, isn't it? So I think that's important. I think most important is your home, then your immediate surroundings. If you can help clean it, as what George says, Gotong Royong, if you can. Unfortunately, in urban areas, Gotong Royong is not a very popular thing nowadays.
We don't even know our neighbours.
Good point. So,
probably get arrested for cleaning things up.
Well, if not, then we have to get someone to clean the mess outside the house. So that has to be dealt with. But the other thing, of course, getting educated about dengue. If you have come in with unexplained fever, be aware of dengue. Whether your area is a hotspot, whether there's been fogging before. If there's been fogging before in your area recently, you know there's been a case of dengue there before. So you must be more aware. So if you have fever going through second, third day, and you feel unwell, you feel more unwell after 2-3 days, I think there's a time you really should see your doctor as quickly and tell them your concern. I think I may have dengue. The doctors should know what test they need to do on you. I think that would be the best advice. Hopefully don't get it. If you do get it, well, get in early and hope intervention is fast enough.
your message, George?
Well, I guess whether it is a mosquito Eddie's bite or Luis Suarez bites, both can be equally lethal. So do what Mira says. Keep boiling the leaves. Viva papaya.
No, nonsense. I didn't say papaya. Thank you very much, both of you, for joining me today. That was Dr. Christopher Lee, Head and Senior Consultant Physician, Department of Medicine, Hospital Sungai Buloh, and Dr. George Lee, Consultant Urologist on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.